Hi, everybody. This is Michelle from Fairly Skipping Stones, and I'm here today with Clay Morgan. So, hi, Clay.
Hi, Michelle.
If you haven't met Clay yet, you can check him out at claywrites.com. And, Clay, you do write. You just wrote your first book. It was released in September, and it's called Undead, Revived, Resuscitated, and Reborn. So, Clay, how's it going for you?
It is busy. I mean, I'm happy, and I'm running like crazy, and I'm trying to figure this whole world of publishing a book out.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's very easy. I mean, you've never done that before.
No, I've been prepared in some ways. People told me what to expect. When I finished the book, it was so hard to finish writing it, and they said now the real work begins. And I thought, what? How in the world could that not be the hard part, writing it? And I have learned very much what a book launch can be all about. So I'm just trying to keep my head above water and do something right.
Well, before we really get started, I thought I should let you guys know that if I randomly giggle or if I make a fool of myself in some other way, it's not my fault because I'm kind of a borderline Clay Morgan fangirl. You may not know that.
I am too. That's a weird coincidence.
Are you? I thought that about you. So like right now, I'm just above, hey, I love that guy. But I'm nowhere near writing what would be truly, truly horrific fan fiction. So, well, you're welcome for that.
That's awesome.
But I am, well, when we get to that point, well, I'll let you know at the end of the interview. I am, you know, a full-fledged claywrites.com blog stalker.
Yes.
So you got that going for you.
We need more. We're a young community there, Playwright.
Is that true?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd like to have more people in the discussion. Blogging is most fun when people are commenting, and you've been a part of some of those discussions. I write shorter and shorter posts, really, that are open-ended because I'd rather just get to the comment section. So the more voices, the merrier.
All right. So I've been... Well, stalking, I'm going to call it research. I've been researching your digital life and over the past month as I started reading the book. And I'm going to share some of the labels that people have attributed to you.
Okay. I am ready. Labels.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay, so we're going to start with historian. Pretty evident, self-evident. Internet
yep.
personality, teacher,
okay.
revolutionary.
Whoa.
Gen
yeah.
Xer, blogger,
definitely.
Dork.
Dork, yes. Sounds like your sisters were on there.
That came from writer, obviously. Optimistic realist.
Yes,
zombie guy.
Really.
Professor. 80s baby. Christian educator. Goonie. Legend. Blog
Whoa.
Buddy. Quirky goofball. Pop culture teacher,
yeah.
And maybe my favorite, a real-life Indiana Jones.
I wanted to be Indiana Jones so bad.
Did you? All right, well, let me ask you, that's a lot of hats. And I want to know, first of all, which one of those like popped out to you do you identify with most? Like, who's Clay Morgan in your head?
Well, he's definitely a dork. You know, I
Jessica.
Always said someday I'm going to make... being a dork popular. I don't know. My sisters always agreed that
working
I was a dork, at least. But, I don't know. I mean, I'm a teacher. That's kind of how I'm wired. And so even my writing, I hope that there's, you know, there's a teaching element in there at sometimes. But I guess the one thing that pulls it all together is a communicator. And that's kind of the all-encompassing for many of those hats.
All right. Just out of curiosity, on the opposite side, anything pop out of that list that maybe somebody in there you don't know, you don't recognize, that people see in you that you don't see?
Anything that I don't really see on that list.
Yeah, you can
legend.
Remember the list.
I don't think I'm a legend, that's for sure. Maybe a legend in my
You're
own
humble.
Mind. Far from
right.
being a legend. I mean, I've had some legendary moments, maybe as a teacher, but, you know, most college teachers are pretty boring, so I can stand out in some people's memories, I guess.
Okay, well, this is what you said about yourself, and you just said it just now. You said, I'm a communicator. I tell stories and find meaning, and I use words and stuff.
Yeah, see?
So
yeah,
I want to know. There you go. You use words and stuff. So here's a question I have. I see that word all the time now, the communicator, you know, and I want to know, like, how do you define that? Like, what does that mean to you? Because I don't always know what people are talking about. Can you define that?
For me, it just means that for whatever reason, I like to, like I said, I do like to tell stories and find meaning. And I just have always been able to connect with people. So mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I'm never the smartest guy in the room, but I always enjoy finding people, and that instant connection for me has always been something I'm comfortable with. Even when I really had no confidence as a younger guy and didn't know really, you know, what my purpose was or what I was really good at, I could always talk to people. And so in conflict, in rooms full of strangers, rooms full of friends, whatever, I'm usually just pretty comfortable because I like connecting with people. And communication kind of follows from that. So, you know, if there's one thing I hope people would see me as, it's someone who's easy to approach and who they can talk to. And, you know, that part of that job is them knowing that I'm listening and that I'm interested in them. So
mm-hmm.
being a communicator is more on the relationship side of things.
All right. Well, and that answers my question, and it clarifies that for me. But clearly, you know, you fill all those roles to a different degree and for somebody somewhere. But I want to know which one of those fellows came up with the idea for Undead.
Now, that one is an interesting question. Which one of those guys came up for Undead? I don't know if any of those, maybe that would be Clay the Learner.
The Learner. Interesting.
The Learner. Well, you know, the easiest way to learn about something is to teach it. And I've discovered that as a teacher now for how many years. But I was reading one night, and an idea just kind of smacked me between the eyes. And I started thinking about how zombies connect to ancient times and to biblical times and things like that, because I started realizing that some people were raised from the dead. And I was surprised to learn that 6 different people were reportedly raised from the dead in the New Testament. And I did not remember those stories. So I kind of started seeking out the information. And before I knew it, I had the seeds of an idea there.
Well, moving on to Undead, you talked about the difference between merely existing and really living, and you use zombies as a metaphor for spiritual life and death. So I guess what I was thinking is that some of us, we kind of, and you say this, we shuffle through life like zombies, but, you know, in the midst of all that, we know that there's more to be had. It seems to me like, you know, we have to kind of die a little bit before we can be undead. We have to sacrifice some of the things from our zombie existence and that feel really real to us. And I'm just wondering if I'm kind of interpreting that correctly in the way, you know, you meant it.
One of the things I went around and around in my head with as I was writing this is that the metaphor works a number of different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I talk about how people kind of become zombies. Like, I have been this in my life. I have been to that place where I feel so empty inside. And whether, you know, it's during times of good when there's plenty of positive things happening, and I think, man, all of these things are going well in my life, why do I still not feel complete? Or even after, you know, my faith was kind of something that was very fulfilling in my life, there would be times when I would think, why am I so depressed today when I'm connected to the God of the universe? I'm supposed to have all this joy, and I'm supposed to be this vibrant, you know, renewed creature, and I just feel like I'm kind of shambling through life, just going through the motions. And that's what's relatable for people, is that we all find ourselves there, and we know that it's supposed to be better because we've had a taste of that. You know, we all have a sense that there's something more for each one of us. And so that's where the metaphor is for me most powerfully. And it's tough. You know, I mean, even in the process of going through this book, it's like, man, people are going to see me as the guy who writes about living life to the fullest and being vibrant. And I better be happy all the time. But, you know, we struggle to feel that fulfillment.
So my favorite quote is about kind of sacrificing what you know, like your comfort zone, in order to open yourself up for things that could be. And as I was reading, I kind of started to see parallels between, you know, what you talk about in Undead and your blog life. Like, you used to blog at Education, and then you choked it dead, you know,
mm-hmm.
and a few months later you began another blog. Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm wondering, is that a stretch for me to see parallels there? Because you had this vibrant community built around education, and then you decided to kill it for, I'm guessing, something that would hopefully be more alive.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because there was like this metaphor happening in my life this year, and that's exactly right. You know, Clay the blogger died, and I've been reborn, you know, as something new. And it is interesting, because I did have a lot of people who would hang out at the old spot. We had a lot of fun. I knew they would always be around checking out what I was working on. And I understood that when I came back in a new form here, you know, rebranded as I am, there's more of an emphasis on faith. There's
right.
It's a whole different feel. It's a whole different blog. And I knew that I was going to lose a lot of people. And so, you know, you got to start over sometimes. In a lot of areas in life. And I just knew that part of my life had run its course. That blog brought me a lot of wonderful things. In part, you know, this book included. But at the same time, I'm now meeting new people and making new relationships with people online. And I think most importantly, I'm writing what I'm supposed to be writing currently. And I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing currently. And obviously, if your heart's not in something, something's wrong. And my heart wasn't really beating for Education there at the end, which mm-hmm. was this goofy blog about whatever.
Like you say, you feel like you need to do this, and you talk about this in the book too, is that, you know, we can't, it's not always moving forward into this great, bright, new wonderfulness. There's going to be pain involved. There's going to be letting go involved.
Yeah.
But it's giving up, you know, that shambling life for something more that we don't always see going into it, that it's more better.
Yep. You know, I say it this way. Birth is a painful process, right? Everybody knows that. And when you talk about being reborn or creating something new, rebirth is also a painful process. It's exciting, and it rejuvenates us because new life always does. New creations mm-hmm. are always exciting. But, yeah, it's hard. And sometimes, you know, you look at it and you say, do I want to pursue what is possible but unknown? And that's a little scary. Or do I want to just stay right here where I kind of know I'm limited, but I'm familiar with it? And most people will choose an unpleasant situation that they're familiar with over possibilities that they can't see clearly. And I've always been a person who's not afraid to try things, and it is scary, but it's also exciting.
I mean, that happens in my life all the time, and that's something that this last year, in particular, year and a half, it's hard. I have to stretch myself, and I have to force myself to do things. That are so outside of my comfort zone that for other people would be like, what is she talking about? You know, that's easy. But
yeah. No, we're not.
Right.
And I've failed. I've had my share of failing as well.
All right, well, I want to talk a little bit about Clay Morgan, author. Shall we do that?
Absolutely.
One thing you mentioned a little bit earlier is about how, you know, you're writing this book and you wondered or worried about, am I putting out this image that I'm so, I got it, you know, I got this under control. But when really that's not the case. And I didn't get that from the book, by the way. I thought that your writing style is really, really personable. And in my stalking slash research, it became really clear to me that people like you and that your writing makes even people who don't know you feel like they're friends with you. I mean, is that something that just falls out of your pen?
That's what I certainly appreciate, that people respond in that way. I remember years ago I got an email from someone, and she was reading my email, and she said, I love reading your email. It's like talking to you. You write like you talk. And I never forgot that, and it kind of became a theme as I started writing more, and I realized mm-hmm. that people felt like they were having a conversation with me when they were reading the way I write. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if that seems to be a pattern, and I certainly appreciate that. So I guess I think like I talk. I don't know. Clear writing and good writing usually comes from clear thinking. So I try to think how I would explain something, and I guess there's not a whole lot of difference between the two.
You're just being yourself.
I am just, and I'm not going to hide anything. Like, I'm not. I think one of the reasons that I'm able to connect with people is because I'm gonna highlight my screw ups, and I'm gonna show you who I am and what I struggle with, and whether I'm speaking in front of a crowd or writing on the internet, I'm not afraid to be real, because I think we're all in the same boat. Just most of us pretend that we're not. So the guard comes down pretty quick when you start talking about how screwed up you are in your thinking. People are thinking, oh man, I'm messed up too. I could connect with that.
Well, that's true. And that was actually my next question, is about, you know, you're very honest and you really lay yourself bare in some places in the book. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if that was difficult for you, or that honesty, it sounds like that honesty just really comes naturally. And for me, as a person who struggles with, okay, just about everything, I kind of find that really incredibly helpful, and I guess it's kind of inspiring for me that here's someone who, on the one hand, speaks with authority, but can also admit to not being so perfect.
Yeah, I don't know what the point is of anybody trying to sound like they have it all together, because I don't think there's a person on the planet who does. And, you know, we can have our Facebook photo society where everything looks perfect and we never update any of the terrible stuff. But the reality is that we all have life happen to us. And so I want people, especially with faith in life, I want people to watch me think through things and struggle through things and to know that it's okay. And I do that when I teach too. You know, my students laugh at all the stories I tell about what a crazy, pathetic student I was at times. But here I am teaching college classes now. And, I mean, I went back to my high school reunion for the first time, and they about choked on their food when they heard I was teaching at college. They couldn't even, like, compute that. So, you know, I'm just a guy who is trying to figure it out, no better than anybody else, that's for sure. And the fact that my name, it's interesting to see how people respond to that.
Well, and people do respond, I mean, clearly, but for me, I look for leadership that, you know, can guide me in the right direction, but it's not so perfect that it completely separates me from them. And in that way, if I'm separated from that leadership, then I'm separated from what I'm striving to be, because I need to know that it's okay to stumble or struggle, you know, with the things I'm going through.
Yeah. Someone, I had a really powerful encounter the other day, and it was somebody who was reading some of my stuff, and they just said, you know, thanks for letting me know I'm not alone. And, you know, what's more important than that? If people are struggling and feeling like they're the only one who is fighting a battle, or they're the only one who's struggling with an issue, I mean, that's a lie. And that's where we die. is when we believe that we're alone and we shut down and we don't seek help. You know, nobody should believe that they're alone, because that's when we shut down, and that's when bad things happen and poisonous thoughts happen. And the reality is that we are not alone. We're all in this together.
You've said that, you know, a few times in your blog on playwrights.com. I've seen that a lot. I mean, it does mean something to people, you know, to have that acknowledged and to be, because we need to be told over and over and over again, I think.
Yeah, you got to remember. I mean, the negative thoughts and the negative voices are so loud. It takes a lot of positive mm-hmm. voices, and I need them too. You know, I just sent a note to a friend, and I said, hey, how about throwing me an encouraging message today? I could use something positive. And I'm not afraid to ask for that, you know, because We need to be honest and say, I'm struggling with something right now, and I could use a happy smile or a good thought.
So, in all of this, what, if anything, has, you know, writing this book taught you about yourself? Like, are you the same Clay coming out of that writing process as you were going into it?
Ooh, am I the same Clay? I guess that would be a yes and no. I mean, one of the things that happens is you have to figure out who you're writing to.
Mm-hmm.
And there were different people in my mind as I wrote this book, and it surprised me who those people were. Stephen King always talks about his ideal reader, and he writes thinking of his wife, Tabitha, and he always just thinks of her, and that's his, like, target. For me, I was thinking, what kind of points am I making here? And who's going to need to hear them, or who might this benefit? And I started thinking about people in my life who are maybe skeptical or antagonistic towards spirituality or mm-hmm. ideas of God or religion or whatever they would call it. And I thought there's been some areas in my life where I haven't been so transparent with my faith in over the years. And I don't think I've been ashamed of what I believe for a while, but I certainly haven't been as vocal about it for whatever reason. You know, some of them probably normal and some of them probably not excusable. But I thought, once I put this out there, like, it's done, you know? And I think writing the book helped me figure out that it was okay to change my whole persona online. You know, when you're teaching, like, students are Googling you while you're lecturing. People can hop online and look at exactly what you're saying and what you're thinking and what you're talking about. There's really no hiding. And since I'm not somebody who wants to contradict myself or be fake in any area, it needs to all be out there. So the biggest thing is that this book brings my beliefs and my views to a lot of people, many of whom I know are surprised. And I know that some friends have picked up the book, and I haven't heard back from them yet. And you know, that's fine. I really don't take anything personally, and the criticism will come. But there are some people who are probably, like, weirded out, and they're thinking, oh, wow, they've got all Jesus-y or something. And you know, they're so used to that meeting. They're so used to that meaning one thing in their life.
Right.
On the flip side, though, there are people who don't want to hear about anything Jesus-y, and they're reading this book and they're saying, wow, I never heard anybody who believes what you believe talk like this. You know, this actually makes sense, or this is actually inspiring. And I think they're getting a taste of God or religion or whatever in a much more positive way than they've ever experienced. They didn't know that it came with people who are willing to screw up, or people who will love to laugh. You know, they never had humor in their church or something like this. So it's interesting to see how my relationships change as a result of being the author of this book.
Yeah, that's something I didn't think about. I relate to that in log land, is that I expose a lot more of myself there, and maybe it's less personal, even with the comments, it's not face-to-face. I expose so much more of myself and a different side of myself there than I do perhaps on a normal interaction level. I mean, there's things that you talk about in a book or in a blog that just, they just flat don't come out in regular conversation. Maybe they should, but they don't.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this to, I'm not saying that everybody should go into work tomorrow and, you know, just start broadcasting and blasting every last single belief. I mean, they're, you know, relationships always have to precede whatever truth we are offering. And and you're right, though, the blogging world, it does create that opportunity to think through things in a different space and in a different way. And it can be really therapeutic.
Yeah, very true. Well, it seemed to me that you were maybe honing down and narrowing your focus a little bit, focusing more on what you really want to pursue and where you want to go in the future, and particularly as it pertains to your blog life. I mean, is that accurate?
Well, I think, so my tagline is pop culture, history, and the meaning of life.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the elements that are in my blog now were over in my past 3 years of writing. I mean, they've been all over the place. Pop culture, especially. What I mm-hmm. probably have done is I've probably increased the amount of history and faith and life and decreased the amount of pop culture. But everything I do comes with pop culture. And I love making references to movies and music and TV shows and all that and finding meaning in that as well. But
right.
the idea is I pretty much know what my next couple book projects will be. Hopefully, you know, I'll really? Be given the opportunity to pursue that. So the two books that are in the works, they're all different, but they're all going to fit into pop culture, history, and the meaning of life. So really, as a branding,
okay.
that focus isn't going to change for at least 2 or 3 years. Probably never. I'll probably always be
You're
that
always
guy.
Gonna be Clay.
But I'm always going to be Clay. I love writing personal essays, and that fits into that transparency we talked about. But
mm-hmm.
who knows? I might be an abject failure and not ever write another book. So.
No, I think there'll be more books.
That would be awesome.
Well, it would be awesome. I'm ready to read some more Clay Morgan books. All right, going with that. Actually went right into what I was going to ask you next. Quoting you, you said, I was made to teach. I was born to be in the classroom. And my passion is teaching. You also said, I write because I can't not write. Stuff is bursting out of me. So, you know, I mean, your book has been out a whole month, Clay. So I want to know, have you seen Undead as a continuation or a building on your passion for teaching, or is it more of a next step, like an evolution of your passion to teach? So I guess what I'm really asking is, do you envision yourself as a teacher who writes books or as a writer who uses, you know, books as a means to teach?
Yeah, that's a good question too. And I've always felt like I'm going to be in front of people speaking. And I feel that's the way God made me. So whether that is in classrooms and colleges or auditoriums or, you know, schools or stages at
mm-hmm.
conferences, whatever it is, I know that God has made me this way. And so he can choose to keep me in Pittsburgh colleges or shut down the teaching career and send me out on the road. You know, if I'm out on the road 200 days a year speaking some year, I'll do that. Either way, I'm going to continue to write, whether I make a penny or not. I'll always be writing online, and I'll always be working on these projects, because it's true. My mind doesn't stop, like, turning over ideas, and this is how I filter the world. And when it comes through my fingers or my pen, that's how I kind of make sense out of reality and hopefully connect with people through that. So I'll always be speaking in front of people in some capacity, and I'll always be writing in some capacity. And it really doesn't matter to me where that ends up being.
You also said there's no magic formula to figuring it all out. Follow your passions and don't try planning the rest of your life.
Hard, isn't it?
Yeah, no joke. It's really hard.
I'm sitting here talking about my next two book projects. And, you know, all at once you want to prepare and set goals and do your best, but we're supposed to hold on to that stuff loosely. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard not to grip tight to this book that I put so much into and not want to give everything I have and, you know, 70 hours a week into working on something. It's hard to hold those things loosely, but I try to remember every day that I don't even have a speaking voice unless God allows me to have it. I don't even have fingers to type unless God allows me to have motor skills. And I don't do so good at reminding myself that every day, but I try to at least start with the basics and remember that I don't have anything apart from Him.
You know, one of the visuals that, speaking of that, one of the visuals that sticks with me from the book is you talked about it being cold in Pittsburgh, and that, you know, when you see your breath, it's a reminder to you that, hey, God made that. You know, without Him, that next breath would not be there.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you can actually see your life escaping you in that split second when you see that poof of air. And that really hit me square the day after I watched my coworker die at work. And I was just walking around outside later on thinking, man, it is right there in front of me. I don't even have this breath, except that God gives me that breath, you know.
Mm-hmm. I do know. So, okay, you sick of me yet, Clay?
Not at all. You kidding?
Well, that's good, because we're coming back next week. We're going to talk about being undead, your book. So, but I thank you for indulging me today. And if anybody else is still out there listening, thanks for listening. And Clay has to come back, because he promised. But I hope the rest of you choose to come back and hear about Clay's awesome book, Undead. Tune in next week, kiddies. And I've always wanted to say this, same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah.
What kid hasn't wanted to say that? I know. You want to say it, Clay? It's fun.
I say it all the time at the end of my classes.
Oh, you do? You got me beat, buddy.
Not every day, but, oh, yeah. You got to give them the same bad time, same bad channel.